This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about hot chocolate.
Yes! Because!
Woo! Oh, yeah.
As we record this, well, no, as it comes out, if you're listening to it the day it comes out, the next day, November 17th, is Life Day.
Life Day? What's yes. Life Day, Annie?
Life Day is a celebration of life that was first started by the Wookiees on Kashyyyk, but then was adopted by the Empire at large. It involves wearing red, somehow walking in space, and a lot of other things that are inexplicable. But other foods as well, including the Shock, the Bantha Shock Surprise, Wookiee cookies, or it's Wookiee ookies, excuse me, and hot chocolate, I guess.
All right. Yeah, sure. That was definitely a statement that made complete human sense. Yes.
Yes. If you're listening and you're like, what? Then I guess good for you. I don't know.
Yeah. Congratulations. It's a Star Wars thing.
It's a Star Wars holiday. It's from the infamous Star Wars holiday special from 1979, which I believe I've watched more than anybody on this planet. There is a Lego one that's very cute, that Disney put out as well. And it's become a whole thing. It's kind of become a whole thing, as a lot of Star Wars things tend to do.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a, like, very geeky other reason that I always suggest hot chocolate. When we talk about Star Wars. One, it's featured in Life Day. But two, one of my very, very favorite canon facts that has been canon before Disney bought Star Wars and after Disney bought Star Wars is Luke Skywalker's very favorite drink is hot chocolate. Which I think is the cutest thing. He loves it.
Is so sweet. That is like the dearest thing about that silly dear boy.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
He loves hot chocolate. And in one of my favorite fan fictions, long story short, he ends up like injured and Darth Vader is taking care of him. And the Imperials are like, why is Darth Vader, he keeps making all these different hot chocolates.
Wow.
Of course, they don't know he's making them to try to win his son over. Mm-hmm. And he's like messing with the machine. And he just has this sudden realization, like, I can never turn my son to the dark side because there's no way a Sith is going to drink hot chocolate and get so much joy out of it. So I'm not going to try to do this anymore. And I'm going to let him be and accept him. It's adorable.
That's amazing. Yes. I did not know about that. So we're all learning things. We're all learning things today.
You are. And then one final other thing is, I think I've said this before, one of my very favorite fan fiction tropes is Cinnamon Roll, which is just a sweetheart character. And Luke is often written that way.
Yeah.
So Samantha from Stuff I've Never Told You, she created this cocktail for me called the Cinnamon Roll, and it is hot chocolate with coffee and rum and whiskey and cinnamon and whipped cream.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
It's appropriate because it's like the fan fiction theme. Also, he loves hot chocolate. Anyway, it's cute.
So, yes, this was an Annie suggestion.
Yes. I love hot chocolate. I have very nostalgic memories of hot chocolate. Yes. So I think we've been trying to do it forever. We talked about it a lot in one of our episodes. I can't remember if it was chocolate or cacao or maybe white chocolate. Cause I had like several instances, and I bet you did too, of like, have we done this before?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that the history of drinking chocolate, like, it was a drink before it was really anything else. And so anytime that we've talked about chocolate, which we've done any number of times, you have to talk about that, like, yeah, hot chocolate that situation. I have to admit that I'm only kind of like so-so on hot chocolate. I mean, like, it's fine. It's nice. I do have some nice memories of it, but it's usually way too sweet for me and like too much. Like the amount of hot chocolate that I want to drink is like a double espresso amount, and probably not with like all of the stuff. I also like dairy isn't the best for me. Now that there are like alternative milks that are often in play, that might be a better exploration for me. And like, you know, you can always control your own sweetener level at home. But yeah, certainly if someone else is making it, I'm like, oh, I don't think that's for me. That's going to be like, if I drink that, you're going to have to deal with me.
Yeah, it is like, it's very much a treat for me. And I did like the Swiss Miss packets when I was growing up, but that was pretty rare. I much prefer, like, I make the like kind of dark chocolate with salts. I like to add salts and chili powder in there and cinnamon. And that's more where I'm at. So there is a big world of taste of hot chocolate, but often what you do get is overly sweet, I would agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is a hot chocolate race. I've spoken about this before. At the end, you get a lot of hot chocolate. It's nice.
Again, I literally cannot imagine. I don't like running, and I don't think that I want hot chocolate while I'm running. Or is it after?
It's at the end.
Okay.
So it's sort of like your post. Like, some people do chocolate milk at the end of a race. This is like, and one time I ran this race and it was like so cold. They said, if you don't want to run it, you can just get the hot chocolate. They were literally like, it's freezing. It's in January.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Which, yeah, National Hot Chocolate Day is January 31st.
Okay.
So they do it around then. I do often get the hot chocolate song stuck in my head, which is from the Polar Express. And I've had it stuck in my head throughout doing this research.
I have not seen Polar Express, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I'm not going to subject you to it. However, the holiday special, yes. one day. And then a real test, as I've said. you can see our episodes on chocolate, yes, white chocolate, and chocolate sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I think even mole and marshmallows.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Also, in a really weird way, probably American cheese. And I'll explain more of that in a few minutes.
Excellent. Well, post haste then, shall we get to our question?
Mm-hmm.
Hot chocolate. What is it?
Well, hot chocolate is a drink made with or flavored like chocolate and consumed hot. There you go. Yeah. There are a lot of different ways to achieve this, and personal preferences about the taste and consistency of the final product can differ quite a bit. But you're generally looking at heating some kind of base liquid, like water or some kind of milk, into which you dissolve some kind of sweetener and then stir in some kind of chocolate product, be it a liquid, solid, or powder. You might flavor this with any number of other things to complement or contrast with the roasty, floral, fruity, bitter flavors of the chocolate. You might add decadent toppings like whipped cream or marshmallows. And the result is warm and rich and can range from like sweet and creamy and smooth to sort of gritty and bracingly bitter, from thin to incredibly thick. It's like a chocolate bar in a mug, with the understanding that some bars of chocolate are like milk chocolate and very sweet, and some contain neither milk nor sugar. Yeah. It's like soothingly invigorating. It's like drinking Hall of the Mountain King.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah? Does that make sense? Okay.
It does to me. It kind of like puts a pep in your step.
Yeah. But in a in a like familiar, comforting way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have talked pretty extensively about chocolate in the aforementioned previous episodes. Yeah. The important basics for today are that chocolate is made from the seeds of the cacao plant, which have been dried, fermented, roasted, and ground. These seeds contain a lot of fats, that's your cocoa butter, and a lot of other stuff, starches and proteins and minerals and flavors, and that's your cocoa solids. Manufacturers will separate out the cocoa butter from the solids and then recombine them in different ways, and sometimes with other stuff, to make bars of chocolate, which have a bunch of cocoa butter, or cocoa powder, which has very little cocoa butter. Hot chocolate is really an impressively wide category of drinks. Like, you are usually starting with a base liquid, but is that water or some kind of milk? If it's milk, is it fresh or powdered milk? Is it fatty or skim? Is it dairy or otherwise? You're probably sweetening your hot chocolate, but how and how much? And then we get into the chocolate part. I mean, you know, you can grind prepared cacao beans or nibs, which are pieces of whole beans, straight into hot liquid if you want to. Most of the time, though, you're either melting in a chocolate bar or stirring in a cocoa powder. There's also a whole market of prepared instant cocoa. Back to that in a second. The interesting thing about all of this is that cocoa solids do not dissolve in water. Like, the best you can do is like hydrate them enough to kind of suspend themselves throughout your base liquid. But even then, they'll settle out fairly quickly. Like, you've probably experienced this as sediment in the bottom of your cocoa cup. Furthermore, cocoa powder is tricksy because it contains just enough, almost like cocoa butter residue in each little particle of cocoa powder, that the particles are hydrophobic. They push away from water. You know, like oil and water do not mix, and they contain just enough oil to do that. You've seen this if you've ever like put a spoonful of cocoa powder into a cup of milk and watched it just immediately bead up into like a flotilla of dry pockets of powder on the surface. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So making a smooth cup of hot chocolate depends on tricking the cocoa particles into cooperating with you. The fact that you're heating them helps, because that can help melt the fats and allow the starches and proteins in the particles the freedom to loosen up and glom onto water molecules and thus get hydrated and thus suspend themselves in the liquid. You can also agitate the mixture. You know, whip, stir, yeah? Yeah?
Stir, whip, 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 stir, whip, stir. Yep. Holiday special.
I still have no idea what that's about, but Annie made us a D&D item that's totally the stir whip, the whipster, the whip
whipster.
It's
a whisk.
It's a whisk. Yeah. It's a heckin' D&D whisk.
Yeah.
It's like enchanted to like automatically whisk stuff. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So you can agitate the mixture.
Yes.
Which can like physically bump the fats around and let the water get at those solids and hydrate them. And this is part of why traditional methods of making hot chocolate do include whipping or frothing the mix. Partially because this can be such a pain, there is, a whole market of instant cocoa, which can come in tubs or in, little single-serving foil-lined packets, and those will stir more easily into hot liquid. This is accomplished by grinding down the cocoa really fine, adding emulsifiers that can help the water molecules and fat molecules play nice. I didn't read the patent before
the
we
patent.
Got in here. But I strongly suspect that much like instant coffee, there's been a few innovations surrounding that kind of technology with freeze drying, perhaps. Anyway, instant cocoa often also contains some kind of thickener, like carrageenan, that will make the final product feel creamy and smooth in your mouth, even if it doesn't contain a lot of fat. Because when you put fat into a shelf-stable product like that, it's going to decrease the lifespan. So, yeah. Some versions of instant cocoa have fancy seasonings like pumpkin spice or salted caramel or something like that.
Mint. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I used to sometimes I would get the fancy packet with the flavors, and that was a special day for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the ones with the little freeze-dried marshmallows. They're not even real marshmallows, but they're so good.
I love, 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 and we're going to talk about this later in the history section, how everybody wants to know about, I was like, history of hot chocolate, and they're like, what about those marshmallows? The first result. Everybody is like, what about those?
Indeed. Oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. So you've got your basic hot chocolate. Other flavorings can be involved. Of course, good chocolate and or cocoa already has a lot of flavors. People add all kinds of other things, though. Vanilla, cinnamon, nutmeg, clove, ginger, chili pepper, orange peel, anise seed, a little bit of salt, maybe some rum or bourbon or amaretto or whatever else you want. Something to thicken it, maybe some ground seeds or nuts or corn flour or egg. And then toppings, whipped cream, marshmallows, a scoop of ice cream, shavings of chocolate, sprinkles of seasonings. It can be consumed as a breakfast beverage or as you would to your coffee throughout the day or during designated snack times or as an after dinner treat. I can't tell you what to do.
It's true. It's true. Back when it would snow, the rare occasion it would snow here in Georgia when I was growing up, it was you go out and play in the snow and you came in, got your hot chocolate.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yes. Huh. Well, speaking of, what about the nutrition?
This one's pretty solidly a treat. I mean, it obviously depends on what you make your hot chocolate with. If you've got a bunch of sugars in there, that's treat territory. It can be fairly okay for you though. If you watch those sugars, it can be calorically dense with the cocoa butter and the fats from whatever milk you may or may not be using. Treats are nice.
Treats are nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it seems we are not the only ones that think so, because we do have some numbers for you.
We do. As of 2019, the global hot chocolate market was estimated to be worth some $3.2 billion and growing.
Whew.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly to me, and to a lot of people reporting on this, hot chocolate seems largely immune to changes in demand. It's sort of a constant.
Okay.
And people drink it all year round. There is a bit of a holiday bump, but they're not really. I know, right? I found that very, very interesting. I think this was this is from a study of 2,000 people. So, grain of salt.
Sure, but
people were pretty much drink it whenever.
Okay.
Yeah. The industry, yes, is expected to grow alongside disposable income around the world. Mm-hmm. And analysts predict the next step in hot chocolate evolution is gourmet hot chocolates. And I saw it in some places called healthy hot chocolates. Heavy quotes, I would say. But, you know, yeah. Fancier, I guess.
Yeah. That hot chocolate run that you do is actually part of like an event series across the United States. Over a dozen cities throw one. And right, it's, yeah, this like corporately sponsored fun run that has over 200,000 participants a year. And you get hot chocolate.
Yes. And there's a chocolate fondue and a sweet coat if you finish. And the medal is like a chocolate bar. I'm such a child. Anyway, yeah, it's a good time if you're into that kind of thing.
You're not the only one. Certainly there are also a few hot chocolate festivals. One in Vancouver is sort of spread throughout the city over the course of a month between like January and February, and participating local shops feature their own take on the drink. They've been running since 2011. This year there were 44 participating shops serving 106 different types of hot chocolate.
106, you say?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
Also, now, like recently, within the past couple years, I think, Valrhona? Never heard that out loud. They sponsor a similar thing in New York City, so.
Yeah. Well, listeners, again, if you've been to any of these things.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Please let us know. And I did want to say here, before we get into the history, I found it really fascinating in this one. And MASH had a great article about this where it was kind of detailing all the different ways people enjoy hot chocolate around the world. Mm-hmm. And it was just so fascinating to see how different cultures and traditions and histories have fed into hot chocolate preparations and traditions around the world. So
yeah.
Just a lot of back and forth culturally. Mm-hmm. It was really, really interesting. Most of these episodes are, but that it was a graph. It was like a little chart. And I was like, oh, that's fascinating.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, right. We are going to get into that history. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do. Start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And again, see our chocolate episodes, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of similarities in what we talked about in this and those and what we talk about here. Because as you said, Lauren, the history of drinking chocolate is a long one. And I'm going to be using hot chocolate and drinking chocolate interchangeably throughout this. Mm-hmm. But it was largely called drinking chocolate, or even just chocolate, for a good chunk of its existence, because mm-hmm. We didn't really have a way to process cacao, so we drank it.
Yeah.
Anyway, archaeological evidence suggests that chocolate was being cultivated in what is now Mexico over 4,000 years ago, and that folks were drinking it back then. In fact, yes, for most of its history, chocolate has been consumed as a liquid of some type. Mm-hmm. Eating chocolate in the form of bars and candies like that, that's fairly recent.
Yeah.
And it didn't really take off until the 1800s when more technology became available, which we are going to talk about a little bit more later. This is also, the 1800s is also when the term drinking chocolate started, the term started popping up more commonly in print, because before that it was assumed that it was for drinking. So you didn't have to specify drinking chocolate.
Yeah, it was just chocolate. Mm-hmm. Sure. Huh.
Yep. Some sources credit the cultivation of cacao specifically to the Olmec civilization in Mesoamerica in 1500 BCE, somewhere around there. And it spread quickly in this region and was adopted by peoples like the Maya. And because, there was no way to refine chocolate, people would ferment the cacao and drink it. And the name for this liquid in some of these ancient languages essentially translated to bitter water. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to cut the bitterness, things like vanilla, chili, or magnolia were sometimes added into the mix. It was typically served frothy, both hot and cold, usually out of a pot. And it was beloved. So much so, it was integral in many aspects of life for some of these civilizations. The Mayans and Aztecs believed that the gods gifted humanity with cacao, and as part of that, used it in many ceremonies and rituals. According to some sources, the Aztecs specifically may have viewed the beans as more valuable than gold and might have used them as currency. It was thought to have medicinal properties too, from general fortifying. And say it with me now, as an aphrodisiac. Yes. And pretty much everything in between, including as a fuel for warriors. And I read somewhere like the cocoa butter was put on wounds. So it was.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, women primarily made hot chocolate, and they guarded the recipes for special hot chocolates. Hmm. Because of women's roles in making hot chocolate and the beliefs some held that hot chocolate was a vehicle for spells and magic, some women who made hot chocolate were persecuted as witches for making the drink and murdered.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Spanish colonizers like Hernan Cortez observed chocolate in the Americas in the 1500s and quickly understood the potential that it had for Europe.
It did take a minute. Like, colonizers did not like hot chocolate at first. One Jesuit even wrote that the foamy consistency was like feces. But eventually it caught on.
Yes. And Cortez transported some cacao beans and tools used to make this hot chocolate back to Europe. And there's a bit of a legend that a former botanist who turned into a pirate named William Hughes returned from the Americas with detailed instructions and tips on making drinking chocolate, which at the time called for maize, milk, sugar, cacao, and even things like ambergris and nutmeg on occasion. And he called it the American nectar.
Ooh. A new device appeared around this time, the molinillo, which is a type of whisk that you operate by placing the head of the device into the liquid that you want to whisk and then roll the handle between your palms, thus rotating the head within the liquid. Previous to this, hot chocolate was kept incorporated and frothy by pouring it back and forth between a couple of pots. Researchers think that this device might have been developed by Spanish colonizers who wanted to drink hot chocolate, but also wanted to sort of like separate themselves from the indigenous culture a little bit. Like, oh, I don't want to do it the way that you do it. I do it this fancy way. Anyway, whatever the provenance, molinillos would develop over the centuries into these really beautiful carved wooden pieces, sometimes with like moving parts and all kinds of interesting carved nooks and crannies to help froth your chocolate.
Yes. But as all this is going on, Europeans continue to be kind of hesitant around hot chocolate when it arrived. And I think it took like a century almost when they started adding sugar into it. And then they were like, oh, okay. Because, you know, this makes it sweeter, less bitter, also makes it more expensive. And it was already at a pretty steep price point for a lot of people. The importation of cacao was heavily taxed in Europe, and though hot chocolate was available, especially in Spain where you could buy it from like street vendors, it was just financially out of reach for most people, especially when compared to cheaper tea and coffee. So maybe you see this menu, it's got like a hot chocolate, very expensive, tea and coffee, much cheaper. That's what people would go for. So hot chocolate became something of a status symbol at this time in Europe, and the well-off did enjoy it. Quite a bit.
Yeah.
quite a bit. One famous example is King Louis XIV, who received chocolate as a wedding gift from his bride and appointed a royal chocolatier who made hot chocolate with the stamp of the monarchy on it. I'm not sure how that works, but that's what I read. So somehow the stamp of the monarchy was involved on this.
Maybe product. on like the serving set or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too. Marie Antoinette allegedly brought her own chocolate maker to court as well. The love the rich had for hot chocolate also resulted in one of my very favorite rabbit holes that I didn't really have time to go down, but I would love to, in these very ornate, expensive chocolate pots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of these included a hole in the lid. You'd place your molinillo in the pot and then place the lid down over it and then froth. Some of these had inlaid ivory. The pots themselves were sometimes made of silver or like gilded porcelain. You might get a set with your family crest done on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Look up pictures.
they're pretty glorious. Mm-hmm.
They are. But the price and bitterness weren't the only reasons that Europe was a bit wary of hot chocolate. The church, capital C church, worried that it wasn't appropriate for children to drink it. Actually, they kind of debated about it for everybody, but especially children. While at the same time, doctors were touting it as, you know, this medicinal thing that could help children. They even recommended using it to mask the taste of bitter medicines. Ultimately, the doctors won out, in heavy quotes, because, you know, the drink became viewed as kid-friendly, but not necessarily for the health reasons the doctor prescribed to it. European religious folk they've long argued about hot chocolate. I think we talked about that in one of our chocolate episodes. As legend has it, one bishop was sent poisoned chocolate after attempting to stop women from drinking it at a Mexican church. Because it was kind of seen as like a, you know, you drink your hot chocolate in church. It was kind of a ritualistic, or, you know, like a gathering element of it. And at least one pope, I think multiple popes, but at least one weighed in on whether drinking hot chocolate during fasting was acceptable. Oh, there's sure. a lot of like, but we could drink that. We could still drink this, right?
But right, but still the hot chocolate, yeah. Mm-hmm. Despite whatever any of the popes had to say about it, the popularity of this drink did spread. In places like London, you could get like a hot chocolate at like a posh coffee house, and a dedicated chocolate house. Opened in 1657. Apparently, just a tiny bit, like a couple decades later, William III was super fond of hot chocolate and had a dedicated chocolate kitchen built into the Hampton Court Palace.
Wow. Can you imagine going to the, like, contractors? Yeah. chocolate kitchen.
This is crucial. Don't mess it up. Yeah.
This is the heart of everything. When European colonists arrived to the Americas, they often tended towards flavors and foods that reminded them of Europe. So chocolate was somewhat of an exception in this case because it was new to most Europeans because they hadn't been able to afford it mm-hmm. in Europe. But this wasn't the case in North America, given the origin of cacao, it's much closer. The closeness and relative affordability of sugar from the Caribbean, largely provided through the forced labor of enslaved peoples.
Yeah.
So it just became this thing where it's like, oh, I can afford this now. People adopted it pretty quickly. George Washington allegedly often drank warm chocolate cream for breakfast,
okay.
as it was called. I think there's a recipe book you can buy from Mount Vernon that has this recipe in it. At the time, this drink often consisted of warmed milk and or water, grated chocolate, and sugar, sometimes with additions like brandy, because of course, chili powder, vanilla, or allspice. It was viewed as something like a health drink, bordering on what we might call a performance drink or energy drink in our modern parlance.
Yeah,
like a high-calorie food that didn't spoil. I'm assuming that was when milk wasn't a part of the equation. But I read that in several places, too, that it could keep for a long time. So it was popular in that way, too. In 1761, Benjamin Franklin recommended hot chocolate for smallpox.
Huh.
So still, a lot of these health things attached to it.
Yeah.
It was easy to transport, and so it was a popular option for soldiers. In fact, there's a long history of cacao rations and hot chocolate and American soldiers from the Revolutionary War to World War II. And a lot of it had to do with boosting morale. That was frequently the reasoning
sure.
given behind why it should be provided. The first U.S. chocolate factory was established in Massachusetts in 1765. But okay, what we've been talking about so far is not hot chocolate as most of us, here in the U.S. at least, would know it. It was a thicker, frothier, less sweet, more chocolatey beverage.
Yeah, probably a little bit like oilier because what you were dealing with was, suspension of these cocoa solids in your milk or your water. And then those the cocoa butters would have been a lot more prominent.
Right. It was often essentially a sometimes sweetened, sometimes not melted chocolate with a texture bit much thicker. This changed in the 1800s. With Conrad Johannes von Houten's invention of the cacao press that could make cocoa powder. So very basically, these powders were the result of removing most of the cacao butter from the beans and then drying and processing the remaining solids. Yeah. This fundamentally changed the hot chocolate landscape, not only making it easier to make, but even more affordable, too.
Yeah. And this is also pretty much where we got the modern concept of the chocolate bar. Because it wasn't really possible until we could more effectively separate out the cocoa butter from the cocoa solids. Another thing that that this dude and or some of his contemporaries innovated was alkalizing the cocoa to make it less acidic. That makes it taste less bitter and also makes it look darker in color. And can I go on like a sort of science sidebar here?
Please.
Okay. All right. So a thing that I couldn't quite work out is whether this alkalized, as sometimes called Dutch processed cocoa, actually disperses better into water than untreated cocoa.
Okay, so right, alkalized cocoa is treated to make the cocoa less acidic. And the common belief has been that this also makes it somehow more soluble, or at the very least, better at dispersing in water. But researchers modernly working in chocolate production have reported that, like, the only way it could really do that is if you're basically making, like, little molecules of soap by making the alkali substance interact with fatty acids in the cocoa mixture. And that isn't what you would want because it would taste soapy. but I'm also wondering whether untreated cocoa being more acidic would make the particles more likely to clump together and resist hydration. Kind of the way that, like, adding an acid to milk makes the particles clump together to eventually get, you know, yogurt or cheese or whatever. Anyway, I could not find anything about that. Pure conjecture. and certainly, however, one thing that I do know is that because Dutch process makes cocoa darker in color, it tricks you into thinking it tastes richer or, like, otherwise more flavorful, even though it's, like, technically less flavorful.
Oh, humans.
Yeah.
Oh, so easily tricked.
Yep, we are. That's, That's just part of the package.
Well, speaking of the package, hot chocolate innovation did not stop there.
Oh, no.
In the 1950s, the Santa Dairy Engineers Company was looking to pivot from making powdered creamer that they'd been contracted to provide to soldiers during the Korean War. So when the war ended, the company instead started focusing on developing a powdered hot chocolate.
Okay.
Uh-huh. They combined powdered creamer, sweeteners, and cocoa powder, put it into packets, and voila, instant hot chocolate. At first, they largely sold to hotels and airlines, but it was a frequently stolen item, a very, like, hoarded, so you'd go to a hotel and you'd take all of them. So the company started selling them in stores under the name Swiss Miss in 1961.
So wild.
I know. In order to increase the shelf life, they switched to a non-fat creamer, and yeah, the instant hot chocolate industry took off. Mm-hmm. This also happens to be when, I'm guessing related, when hot chocolate pot production pretty much died.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, now people would just make it instantly. They don't
need a whole pot. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we had had time, there's a whole world of, like, $27,000 hot chocolate pots.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you.
Similar, not since our spoon episode,
yes,
have I seen so many, like completely niche,
yes,
wonderfully, beautifully niche corners of the internet dedicated to this type of specialty product.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I had no idea. Okay. Also, as I mentioned at the top, people seem very, very interested when the marshmallows got added into the equation of hot chocolate.
Yeah.
It is, like, literally one of the first results I got. So briefly, roundabouts 1917, marshmallow companies were advertising all the ways marshmallows could be used to ratchet up their popularity. We talked about that a lot. You know, when companies release, like, the magazines that have all of these recipes.
Yeah, yeah.
Including one, Lauren, for cold lettuce, mayonnaise, and marshmallows. And I can't abide by that. I can't abide by that.
No, I like all of those things, and I don't want that.
But yeah, one of the ways of using these marshmallows, one of the recipes they came up with, was as a topping to hot chocolate. And there are thermodynamics involved, and scientists have looked into them.
Okay. Yes. Putting thermodynamics right here. One more note about this marketing material, because it was a company called Angelus Marshmallows specifically, which is a Buffy fan I just had to mention. This was also where we got the idea of using marshmallows as a topping for sweet potato casserole. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But back to the thermodynamics of marshmallows on top of hot chocolate. Okay. So Popular Science magazine posed this super interesting question. When you put marshmallows on top of hot cocoa, does it cool down the cup by absorbing some of that heat, thus melting the marshmallows? Or do the marshmallows help keep it warm by insulating the surface of the hot cocoa from ambient airflow? I have no answer for you. They like consulted like a thermodynamics researcher, and the dude was like, well, you know, without really doing some experiments, I can't tell you.
Wow. Well, get on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, right, like they are going to cool down the cocoa like in the immediate term, but whether or not they insulate it over a long term enough to make up for that fact in some kind of meaningful way is really the question.
It's a very important question. Very important question. I'll say when I get fancy and put like actual marshmallows in my hot chocolate, I feel like they melt and then they kind of, there's a flavor dynamic going on, but they kind of slow you down in drinking it and they have like that layer on top. I have no idea if that has anything to do with heat. But there's something is happening here. Something is happening here. I will also say, because what I suspect people mean when they are searching, like, how did marshmallows get it? They're talking about, like, the freeze-dried.
Right. That come in the Swiss Miss packets. Yeah.
Yes. Surprisingly, very little to be found about that. I would assume it happened pretty quickly in, like, the late 60s, 70s, because that's when that kind of stuff was happening.
Yeah. Now I don't remember from our marshmallow episode, and I didn't look it up, when like the freeze-dried marshmallows in cereal thing happened and all of that. But I believe it was sometime in like the late 60s, early 70s. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, there's no way of knowing right now.
No. I'm telling you, I specifically searched for it and I couldn't find it.
We'll
maybe it's one of those
it.
Things where it's just like,
Nobody knows.
Oh, well, maybe one of you listeners know. Ooh. Please write in.
Yeah.
And this brings us to our TikTok fact of the day, which I guess is a new thing. It's becoming pretty common now.
Yeah. Yep.
Eric Torres Garcia posted a TikTok in 2019 of a cocoa bomb or hot chocolate bomb. So basically to make these, you pour hot milk or water over the sphere of chocolate and it opens up to reveal marshmallows and it makes hot chocolate. I'd heard of this. I've never actually seen it in action, but I had heard of it. He wasn't the first to do it at all. It was featured on Oprah's Favorite Things in 2018. But he certainly popularized it when his post went viral, and the video has over 2.6 million views. Ooh. And I bet it's gone up since then.
Sure.
TikTok, you know, these things go viral.
Yeah.
And then you can't find feta cheese.
And then
That's my TikTok wisdom.
Oh, I still haven't made that dang pasta. Oh, I need to.
It's really good. Well, I think this is what we have to say about hot chocolate for now.
I think it is. We do have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener.
Wow. That got intense.
That's the song at the end of the holiday special. I wanted to do Be Authors Just One More Round, Friends, then Gather Around, Friends. But anyway, you haven't seen it, so we're going to have to fix this, Lauren. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. I need to watch the holiday special. Okay. I'm in.
An hour and 20 minutes of asking what's happening. Also, I forgot to say, listeners, if you have any hot chocolate recipes, please write in.
Oh, always.
I'd love to hear about your preferences.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you do a holiday special thing, which I am preparing for mine.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. If you have Life Day plans, let us know.
But in the meantime, we continue to torment you listeners by describing pictures that you cannot see and are adorable. But you all came through so much and you sent us these super cute pictures of your pets in costume. Adorable. All right. So we're starting with Evan. Evan wrote, here's Archer. He plays shortstop for the San Diego Padres. No ball can get past him. Archer was compensated for his modeling with a large carrot. And Archer, he looks, I mean, he fits the part.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's in a little outfit, like baseball outfit, baseball cap.
Yeah, he's got a jersey. He's got the little cap. He looks very serious about his job. He's a bigger dog, and he's a heckin' good doggo. That is what I can tell you about this.
Yes, I wouldn't mess with him. I don't think I could get a ball past him at all.
No, 0%. Oh heck. Janelle wrote, hello, ladies. Love your podcast. I wanted to share my food-themed Halloween costumes for my two doodle friends. And, okay, attached are two doodle dogs of some kind, and they're dressed as cobs of corn.
Yes.
And it looks like the kernels were maybe made with like a pool noodle that's been cut up.
Yeah.
And then it's got the husks on their butts, and they're doing everyone involved in these photographs is doing a really good job.
That's excellent. Fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
What can we say? But this is just brilliance. Brilliance.
It's
so cute.
It's a beautiful thing.
Oh my gosh. I love it. I love it. So yes, thank you to all of you who have been sending these pictures. Thanks to these two listeners.
Yeah.
And yes, keep them coming. If you would like to contact us, You can. You can email us at hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.